Well, Kev, welcome to your podcast.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on my podcast.
Oh, that's all right. Thanks for having me on your podcast.
Again.
So the reason we're doing this is because we're celebrating Kevin Clifton's special 100th episode.
Yes.
And Kev WhatsApped me and said it would be nice that I came back to interview Kev because I interviewed Kev on episode one.
Mm.
So I'm really looking forward to this because we were just saying off camera before when we didn't live it out that life's changed big time for you.
Yeah.
Since episode one. And
yeah.
You're in a very different place.
Yeah. So I listened back to episode one just now. Just to sort of compare and see where I was. Because I remember that episode being a really interesting first episode of the podcast. And I was in a point in my life where everything was sort of changing and I was quite scared of everything. And I'd just done a Tony Robbins course and all of this. And there was a lot of changes in my life. And I heard myself say on the podcast that I'm a complete mess and I've got anxiety about everything and I'm scared of everything. Of everything and everyone and what everyone thinks. And now it's like, I don't know exactly how long, but like a couple of years later or something. And yeah, I feel it in a very different place now. Like still the odd thing here and there, but I feel like I'm sort of a different person or a different version of me compared to that guy. I wanted to give that guy a hug and go, it's all gonna be all right. It's all gonna be fine. But that's kind of like, why I thought this would be really interesting as well, just to see that difference. Because I said on that episode as well, while I set up the podcast, I wanted to hear from different people, from you know different artists and creatives and that, and see what goes on in their heads and their processes. And most of them are sort of exactly the same. Like what I'm figuring out is that everyone's winging it all the time. Mm. Everyone's just at different stages in what they're doing, or they're in different stages of clarity of what they want to do. So yeah, it's all going to be fine. It's turning out all right at the moment.
Well, we'll talk about that in a minute. Mm. But I'd love for you to share, if you could, maybe what you were anxious about and how you overcame that anxiety. Because if your 100 episodes ago self was sat there, you just hugging him and saying everything will be all right, you probably wouldn't have taken that. You probably went, yeah, thanks. Fuck off, because everything's shit.
Now
you can look back.
Yeah.
Because I know you really are passionate about being open about maybe sometimes feeling not good enough or what people think about you or anxiety or, you know, am I going to be credible? We were just talking about TikTok, for example. Yeah, take us on that journey of overcoming all that anxiety.
Yeah, a lot of it was sort of imposter syndrome at the time, I think, and just worried about what everyone else was going to say. And I said on that episode that that's because of my upbringing in a competition world where I'm being judged all the time. So my sense of sort of self-worth was coming from judges. And then I was on, you know, a massive show like Strictly Come Dancing, and it was coming from voters and social media. And then at the time when we did that interview, it was like the press were reporting on every step I made and everything I did at the time. So I was reading a lot of stuff about myself. So it was all this sort of outside noise and not being able to sort of figure out, oh, what is it that I want? And am I able to sort of feel good enough myself? And in the last 2 years, and don't forget, we've been through a pandemic during that time where most of sort of what I was hoping to do in terms of career, like a lot of it got delayed, and it would have been really easy for me to just completely collapse, but I didn't, and that was really interesting. And I think the guy that was doing that first episode probably would have totally collapsed, because what happened as well, I had all this great stuff lined up in terms of work, and then the pandemic, you know, because that work was in the theatre, a lot of the work got delayed and stuff, and then I started reading things about myself, saying like, oh, you know, his career's over, he's messed it all up, you know, it's all gone wrong, da, da, da. And But what I realized more than anything, like I said at the beginning, is that everyone's winging everything and no one knows what they're talking about, about anything.
Everyone, except me.
Except me, yeah. No, but like everyone's just at their stage in the process and talking about everything as best they know. So, you know, at the time when I'd be reading like Kevin's this and Kevin's that, say on Twitter or whatever, like, oh, Kevin wants to be in a musical. He'll be like, oh, lol. Do you know what I mean? Like he'll never make it. And then I did make it. So that person didn't know what they were talking about. Mm. And then it was written, you know, the press at the time were writing Kevin's musical theatre career is non-existent, it's disappeared, blah, 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 blah. And I knew I had about 4 shows lined up. I was like, right, so they don't know what they're talking about either. I heard, this was at a different point, but like on a podcast I was listening, why I was listening to it, I don't know. But like whilst I was doing Strictly, there was like a podcast about Strictly and people were sort of talking about the dances and stuff. And they started saying something about one of my dances and said, it was about a Doctor Who dance that I did with Stacey, a Doctor Who themed. And they were criticizing it going, I think it's wrong that Stacey should be forced to do a Doctor Who themed dance just because Kevin's a massive fan of Doctor Who. Why doesn't he play it straight for her? And I thought, I've never watched Doctor Who in my life. I'm not a massive Doctor Who fan.
Yeah, you need to tell everyone. I made that official news.
So they didn't know what they were talking about. And and it was just, I've just had this big realization that like, if you start putting too much, reading too much into what anyone thinks about anything, there's no point because no one knows what they're talking about. Most of what's written in the press is made up. That's just fact. Mm. People write things on Twitter they don't know what they're talking about. So I sort of stopped worrying. Things will get me here and there still, like it does everybody. But I sort of managed to let go a lot of what everyone thinks all the time and everyone's opinions, because it doesn't really matter. And I've got a lot more in touch over the last couple of years of just what do I want out of life? What do I want out of career? What do I want? What are my values? You know, we always, whenever we have a chat, we always talk about the values factor at some point. Mm. And it's like, what are my values in life? No matter what anyone else's are. And just head towards that, and that's all right. I think also being with Stace, she's had a massive influence on me in terms of she's really good at all of this. She sort of doesn't know it. It's like she hasn't had to study it or anything, but she's just very stable and sort of mentally and emotionally, and she doesn't take on board too much, like when everyone's, so if someone has a go at her, she takes it on board if, you know, she thinks it'll help. But if it's just someone throwing out abuse or opinions, you know, willy-nilly, she just lets it go. And sometimes, let's say, for example, if I'm getting into my own head, as we know I can do sometimes, like say during the pandemic, like there's a certain point where I'm thinking, oh, I shouldn't be sat here watching Tiger King. I should be productive. I should be doing something. Shakespeare wrote these things during a lockdown situation. Ah, I've got to be Shakespeare. Ah. And she was like, why are you getting yourself all worked up? And I was like, because I feel like I'm not being productive. And she was like, it's just do what you want to do right now. It's fine. Don't go 12 rounds with yourself. Mm. Like, just do what you want to do. And that's all right. Don't judge yourself too much like that. So I would do that, and I was like, yeah, I feel better now. And then the next day I'd be like, I actually feel like doing some writing on something, and then I'd just do that. And she's like, see, you're productive anyway, like you'll do it. And so I guess on the whole I feel a bit more grounded and together than I did then. I'm not as scared as I did then. And I think also at the time I was like, I want to try and branch out into other things. I want to do more acting and singing. And on episode 1, I could hear it in my voice going, I really want to try and make a go of this, and I want to be respected by people. And it was really important to me that, you know, my colleagues would respect what I was doing. And I had this imposter syndrome, and you were sort of trying to get to the bottom of it when we were having that chat and going, why do you feel like that? And you said, do you ever look back on things that you have done, not just looking ahead, oh, are they going to like me? Are they going to like me? Am I going to be a success or not? Look back on the things you have done and just acknowledge, actually, you've achieved quite a lot. So there's nothing to suggest that you won't carry on down that road. And I was squirming when you were saying it to me. You were going, you've done this, you've done this, you've done this. And I was going, yeah, I have. But I think I'm slightly more comfortable with myself now going, yeah, I have done this and I have done that. And at the time I was going, oh God, I want to try and be an actor and a singer. And that's what I am. As I'm sat here right now, that's what I am. I'm an actor now and a singer. I'm doing musicals, I'm doing plays, and it's really exciting. And I'm sort of, I'm a lot more excited about things than scared.
Mm.
And I think back then I was more scared about everything than excited.
Mm.
Mm.
So I think this is a brilliant journey.
Mm.
There's definitely a change in your energy.
Mm.
Quickly, just want to talk about critics,
mm.
the media,
mm.
haters, everyone who has an opinion. Because I know behind everything that you do, because I know you well, you know, you want to help people. I know that.
Mm.
And so you've talked about things like burnout and stuff like that. I remember being with you at times when, you know, the media wasn't on your side and how hard it was and how it was coming from everywhere. But what you've essentially said now is, well, pretty much every critic doesn't know what they're talking about or are lying. Also, often critics are hurt people,
mm.
and you know, they sold out on their dreams. So how could you help someone who is affected by what other people think about them? And what, give us a couple of tips, because you've taken us on the journey, that's great, but looking back, what mindset can we have and what tips can you give people to care less about what other people think? Because what it sounds like your journey is 2 years ago, I really cared about what everyone thought about me. Mm. Now I care about what I think about me.
Mm.
And that's a very simple way of looking at it. Mm. So, because I see it everywhere. People are playing small or playing scared or not living to their potential because they're worried about what people will say about them, their parents, mm. critics, people on social media. It's a massive thing.
Mm.
I read a book called The Courage to be Disliked, and it said that freedom is having courage to be disliked. That is freedom.
Mm.
So you give us a couple of tips that you've learned on the journey of not reading the papers and not caring about what they think. And
So
I know that's a really fucking long way of asking a question. I'm normally better at asking questions,
but I
wanted
totally
to give context.
It.
Yeah.
I had a really good acting session once, like a lesson where, so this was the exercise, right? He gave us a piece of paper with like one scene, and it was a very short scene, two characters. And he said, you play that character, character number one, and I'll play character number two, and we'll just say these lines. And it was like, I don't know, 10 lines. It was a very short piece, and he didn't give me any context. It was just, let's just do a dry run through. So I read the lines and he read the lines, and we're just going back and forth. He said, okay, let's now do it again with a bit of like, just have a little think through that scene, you know, what might be happening and who this character might be, and da da da, and then let's do it again. And then so we did it again. And we ended up doing a few levels and doing it a few times until we had like, okay, this is our scene. He said, right, now write down 5 things about this character that you think, like 5 characteristics of this person that you're playing, call it character number one. 5 things that you think about them. So I wrote down 5 things. And then he said, now circle the one that you think is the most, like is the largest in this character, the one that best describes this character that you're playing. So I circled that. And he went, okay. You're happy with your answers? Yeah. He goes, right, I'm going to ask you about it now. He says, actually, I'm going to tell you about it. Right. And he said, the truth is, you know nothing at all about this character. Because all I've given you is like about 10 lines of dialogue. Now, that dialogue can come from anywhere. And he said, you don't know whether, first of all, you don't know whether this character's a man or a woman. You don't know what time it's set in, whether it's way in the past or in the future or present day. You don't know what country it's set in. You don't know what social status, you know, or what class they're from, or what race or whatever. You don't know anything. You don't know, that's just about the character themselves. Now you don't know where this scene is happening, under what circumstances. You know absolutely nothing about this, about what's happening in this scene, because I haven't given you any context. So what you've just done is you've written down five things that are probably characteristics of yourself, and you've circled the one that is the most prevalent. And I was like looking at it and going, look at your five things. You've just described yourself, right? And I was like, oh my, I can't remember what the things were now, but I was like, oh my God, you're right. I've written down five things that are that I really relate to myself, and I've circled the one that's probably biggest in me. And he said, yeah, because the whole point is you know nothing about this character, but you've projected yourself onto that character. And that's what we do all the time. So the point of the lesson was like about how we use things in ourselves to play different characters when we're acting, and we need more context if we're gonna, you know, explore it more deeply, but you find things in yourself and da-da-da-da-da-da-da. But what I learned from that is that we do that all the time. Like, we all have opinions on people we've never met. Like, if you think of any famous person that you've never, like, I don't know, who's really famous? Beyonce. Everyone's got an opinion of some sort on Beyonce or Jay-Z or Justin Bieber or David Beckham, you know, whatever. But no one, you know, a lot of people haven't met these people. So, and most of the time what we do is we just project our own shit onto other people. And I see it when we talk about Strictly Come Dancing on the podcast while Strictly Come Dancing's on. And I sort of see people's opinions on social media. And sometimes I'll see people say something like, oh, I wouldn't vote for that person because I just feel like they're quite up themselves. And I think, okay, you've never met that person. And then I think, I have. I know they're not up themselves at all. I've met them quite a lot and I know them as a person, and you've got that completely wrong. What that tells me is there's something in you that's probably quite up yourself. And so when people are giving these opinions, like, most of the time they're just projecting themselves onto other people. That there's a lot of, for example, on Strictly, there's a lot of women that criticize confident women on Strictly. And I know there's a lot of, like, the message at the moment is like, you know, women should be confident and real friends fix each other's crowns and all of that. That's the social media kind of, that's what we should all be doing. But when it comes to it, when you get someone who's real sort of confident and sassy, a woman on Strictly, they always get a lot of criticism from women. And what that tells me is any of those women that are criticizing them is that those women would probably quite like to be that. You know, they see themselves as they could be quite confident and sassy. And when they see someone else being that and thriving, it brings something up in them that it makes them realize that they're not as confident as they'd like to be, but they want to be seen as that, is what I think. Mm. And so they criticize, you know, so they go, oh, you know, I don't like it. She's arrogant or up herself, or she thinks she's this. And all it is like, you don't know that person. So what I learned from that acting lesson is, like, people are just giving opinions on people that always says more about them than it does about the person. I didn't used to read any reviews because I was too thin-skinned. Now I'm not so scared of them. I don't give them too much credit, reviews, to be honest. But I have a look here and there just to see what people are writing. And someone, you know, some of them are really nice. I'm in Rock of Ages at the moment, and some of them, some guy said, Kevin Clifton's playing a rock star, and he's too small to be a rock star.
Because height is the main characteristic of a rock star, isn't it?
Incredible.
Yeah.
That was incredible. I was like,
how tall was Prince?
I don't know. But
5 foot something?
Yeah.
Not a lot. Yeah.
Yeah. But, and so as I look at these things and I think people are just writing from, like, their perspective. And people like different things. And, you know, my mate came back from seeing the James Bond film today, and he was like, oh, it's amazing. You know, James Bond is wicked. And I watch James Bond sometimes. I haven't seen the latest one, but like, I've watched some of them and gone, oh, I don't know if I'm a huge Bond fan. It all feels a bit strange. It all feels a bit silly. But I'm a massive wrestling fan, and he would think wrestling is silly. Do you know what I mean? Everyone's just got their own. Like, everyone's talking about themselves all the time. Mm. So when you see them talking about you, especially if they don't know you, it's just something in them that's coming out. So I don't pay it the same attention. Mm. So like, I've been like, when I got when I left Strictly, and people were writing, oh, because he thinks he's bigger than the show. Like, a few years ago, I'd have been like, why are they writing this about me? Why are they saying, oh, he thinks he's bigger than the show? Now I just read it and go, this person doesn't know what they're talking about. Mm. And if, you know, Mary1295 on Twitter wants to believe it, it's up to her. You know, if it makes Mary comfortable feeling like Kevin thinks he's too big for his boots, then good for you. Go for it. I know that. So it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's very profound. I do. I think it's very profound. I'm going to chuck something else at you. Mm. Tell me what you think about this. Are you more comfortable now with criticism because you like yourself more now than you did 2 years ago?
I think that's probably right.
Because if you really like yourself, no one who you don't know can change your mind about yourself.
Mm.
But if you don't like yourself, you're going to be more vulnerable and open to criticism. Mm. The more sure you are of yourself, the more sure you are that critics are wrong.
Yeah.
The less sure you are of yourself, the more you start to question from external sources.
Mm. Yeah. And I used to hear people saying that kind of, you know, you have to start with yourself. Yeah, you have to be comfortable with yourself. You have to like yourself first before you can go out and, you know, do all the things you want to do. And I used to kind of go, no, I know, but I just want to go and achieve that. And I want to have people clap me and respect it and, you know, whatever. But now I totally get it. I totally get that whole concept of just being comfortable with yourself first. And I think you're right. I think then just things don't hit you as much. Because like a couple of years ago, if someone goes, oh, Kevin's too small to play a rock star, if I'd have heard that before the audition, I probably wouldn't have auditioned. Mm. Oh God, everyone's going to think I'm too small to be a rock star. And now I go, I'm playing a rock star and I'm good at it.
Yeah.
And I'm okay with saying that now. There's still a little part of me that doesn't want to say it because I don't want people to think I'm arrogant. But like a couple of years ago on that episode, like you were trying to get me to say those things about myself. And I was like, no, I can't. I'm not comfortable with accepting that I've done well at something and saying it out loud because then people will think this about it. But and I still, you know, it's still weird coming out my mouth, but at the same time, I'm more comfortable accepting that I'm doing a decent job at things rather than being like, no, not me, not little old me, you know, shying away from it.
Mm. Yeah. How's life changed in the last 2 years and 100 episodes, excluding what we've covered so far? I mean, you were in Strictly then,
yeah,
and then you left Strictly.
Yeah.
And then did you start Rock of Ages and then stop it and then start it again?
I'd done Rock of Ages before leaving Strictly.
Yeah.
Then what happened was I was in conversations with Strictly before leaving. I had said to them after, so I did another season after we did our first episode, and I did say to them at the time, you know, there will come a time when I'll step aside. I don't know exactly when that is yet, but I just want you to know it's something I'm thinking about. So it didn't come out of the blue, because I wanted to do more theatre. I wanted to explore acting and singing a lot more. And I did that last season. And a sort of a few factors. I suppose on that last season, I went out early, which meant I could do the Children in Need special and the Christmas special for the first time. I'd never done it. And so I did the, I won the Children in Need special and won the Christmas special that year, which meant I'd sort of completed like the grand slam of everything you can win on Strictly. So there was that. There was also the fact that I'd had lots of different types of partners, therefore different, like they always say this on Strictly, the Strictly journey. But I felt like I'd had all the different types of journeys. You know, I'd had a year when I'd won, I'd had a year when I'd had a partner who was a complete novice and gone on a journey to improving and made the final. I had a comedian who everyone thought would go out straight away and she did really well. A year when everyone says, oh no, they're too good to be in the competition from week one, it's not fair, you know, like that type of thing when you get someone who's really good. Presenters, actors, singers, you know, different types of partners, comedians. And I sort of was getting to a point of like, I don't want to start repeating myself on Strictly. I've sort of done everything there is to do. And I actually said to them, one thing I'd be really interested in is, you know, if you ever to go down the route, which they've done this year, of two men dancing together. I said, that would be interesting, because that's not something I'd done before. But they couldn't guarantee me that at the time. It's something that they were looking into. And then Strictly Ballroom, the musical, came about. And I had auditioned for that the first time it came around into the West End. We talked about this on episode one as well. How I auditioned for it, thought I would be perfect for the role, but didn't get it. And then this was, I'd heard that the tour was coming around of Strictly Ballroom, so I went for it again. I auditioned again, and I said, if I get this, I'm not going to be able to turn it down. But it was going to start when Strictly was starting, so it was coming to that time of like whether I was going to sign for another year with Strictly or I was waiting to hear from Strictly Ballroom. And I just said this to them. I said, if I get Strictly Ballroom, I won't be able to turn it down. And then I got it. So I called them and said, okay, I think it's time to leave. And they were really lovely about it. And funnily enough, Stacey recorded the video footage of that phone call.
Could you maybe edit that in?
Maybe. Maybe. The main reason we did it was because I knew, because I know what they're like, I knew that newspapers would try and spin it to make it look like I'd been fired. Because that's the type of thing that they like to do.
Yeah.
Like, you know, they've got rid of him. So we recorded the conversation. Obviously, you can't hear them talking, but you can see me in the room on the phone. So that I've got proof of like, no, that's not what happened. It was a really lovely conversation. And so I left Strictly to do this. And then the pandemic hit. So I get this phone call going, Strictly Ballroom, we've moved it a year on now, which sort of opened me up for the rest of the year in terms of work. Suddenly the theatres were closed. I'd left specifically to do theatre and the theatres were now closed. So inevitably, you know, the comments and the press became like, oh, he's messed it up, you know, da 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 da. And there were a couple of conversations here and there with Strictly about potentially coming back on the show and whatever, and you know, I'd always be open to talking to them, and I've got a really nice relationship with them. But I was talking to Stace a lot about it to get her opinions, and Stace is always very much like, I think you should do whatever you want to do. Like, don't worry what anyone says, do what you want to do. But at the same time, she was saying, and I was saying, I was like, I've made this decision now, and I don't want to feel like I'm just walking back again because everything's changed, and I'll find myself just going back to like a comfort blanket. I've got to back myself here. I've made this big jump to being, I'm going to be an actor now, and I'm going to do it. And with people, with everyone saying, and we've talked about this before, critics being a motivator sometimes. Like, with everyone saying, oh, he's, you know, he thinks he's going to be an actor, you know, but and sort of taking the piss. I was like, I've got to back myself here and stay the course. And So I did, and now it's like I'm in a situation now where with the theatres opening up, I'm just so like sort of back to back with shows. I just did Singing in the Rain, which is a really good story. But Singing in the Rain, and now Rock of Ages again. I'm doing Burn the Floor again at the beginning of the year. Then I'm doing the War of the Worlds arena tour. Then some more Singing in the Rain on tour. And then I start Strictly Ballroom because it got moved back another year. I start in September 22 until the summer of 23 with Strictly Ballroom, the musical. So it's gone like just back to back, all lined up of all the stuff that I want to do. And it's worked out really well. I mean, I'm really pleased about it. And I feel sort of justified in backing myself to do it.
Wow. Mm. That's great. Take us to episode 200. No. Take us to episode 500.
Yeah.
So that is another 4 years. Mm. Because you just plotted out really your next 18 months, two years there. Take us to episode 500. I've got a grey beard, you're still looking young.
Oh, I don't know about that.
we meet up to do your 500th episode. What would you like to have done and achieved?
By episode, what did you say, 500?
Yeah, which is in 4 years, isn't it?
By episode 500, my TV drama will have been made and be out there. That's the big thing.
Have you been writing that? Because we talked about that. We had a Zoom, didn't we, in the lockdown, and you were talking about doing more writing.
Yeah. So me and my sort of team that are putting it together, we are at a stage where we have a pitch, and I've spoken to one production company already, but like we're just making a few edits to the pitch in terms of an outline of the episodes, and then we're going to take it to some more production companies and maybe streamers and stuff, and get it commissioned and get it made.
And do you want to play a part in that, or just
maybe?
Yeah,
I think I do at the moment. Not the lead, because as Stacey pointed out to me, the lead character is sort of based on me in the ballroom competition world. Based on. I'm just going to point
inspired
that out now.
Inspired by true events,
not a biography. And Stacey was like, "You're too old to play you." But yeah, maybe being it. But I'm really excited about it. That'll be out there by then. I'm very confident of it.
Ooh, can you give us a bit of a teaser on that? What can you tell us about that?
It's based in the ballroom competition world, but it's not a sort of fluffy romantic piece about, you know, finding love on the dance floor and winning the competition in the end. Like, it's not strictly ballroom. It's about sort of drama and if you think like what I, Tonya, was to ice skating.
Yes.
A sort of, you know, what you have to go through type of series, and it's going to be a drama series. That's what we're doing. Yeah, that's my exciting new project.
We heard it here first. So I don't even know if you should say this on your own 100th episode, but if you don't risk anything, you risk everything.
Yes.
What about being a dad? You can edit this next bit out if I'm too far.
No,
but
do you know what? Maybe. I mean, it's not like something that's been actively worked on at the moment.
Well, that's stage one, mate.
We talk about it here and there. Yeah, I think, you know, we're both quite open to the idea of having kids.
Yeah.
You know, like I say, we're not.
Why did you look down?
Having kids.
Yeah.
You know, we haven't really like put a timeline on it or anything, but maybe. Who knows?
You were actually going to say something before I threw that one at you. Can you remember what it was?
Well, just going back to the Singing in the Rain thing, right? Because you said if you don't risk anything, you risk everything, right? So, when all this was happening, what I was telling you about, like the shows were getting moved, Strictly Ballroom had been moved, And we were in rehearsals for Burn the Floor, and then that got moved. And then there was talk about the War of the Worlds, and then that got moved. And it was all these things were up in the air. But like the one constant was like, okay, but in September 21, Strictly Ballroom's going to happen. Whatever happens, surely the theatres will be open by then. And then, and I, that was my, do you call it the canary down the mine or whatever? The light at the end of the tunnel, basically.
That sounds like a northern phrase, yeah, doesn't it?
Yeah. And then I got a phone call saying they've moved it back another year. And I was like, okay, now everything really has moved on quite a lot. And I've got a lot of stuff in the future, but right now there's nothing happening in the diary apart from my own projects that I'm getting off the ground. You know, there's nothing in terms of the theatre that I want to do. And I was slightly concerned about that. And on Christmas Day last year, me, it was just the two of us in the house because we weren't allowed anyone round. We were adamant that we didn't want it to be just like, oh, we'll watch whatever we were normally going to watch on Netflix or whatever. It's got to feel Christmassy. Singing in the Rain was on TV. And I said, right, we're going to watch Singing in the Rain. Stace was like, what's that? I was like, fucking, are you joking? Singing in the Rain? That's like, let's listen to the Beatles. Who are they? Do you know what I mean? It's like it's Singing in the Rain. It's like one of the most, probably the most famous musical in history. And she went, oh, I don't really know it. I've never seen it. I was like, right, I've seen this like a million times. We're going to watch it. She's like, all right. So we put it on and I get all excited. You know, like when I get all energized about something and I'm like, yeah, I'm really into this. Like when I'm talking about wrestling or something. We start watching. I'm telling her all about it. This is this famous scene where this happens. And, you know, on the Gene Kelly did this and this is what happened backstage and blah, 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 blah. And then there's this guy, Donald O'Connor, and he was always like my favorite. And he does the routine, make them laugh, in Singing in the Rain, where he's sort of falling over things and getting hit on the head. And it's an unbelievable number. And I've watched this number on YouTube so many times since I was watching YouTube. Like, I've watched the film loads of times. And I'd still, to this day, watch it, you know, every month at some point, just because I love it. She's like, oh, righto. We watched it, and she's not into musicals, she doesn't really know the stuff. And then we got to the end of it, and Stace went, you know, they should make a show out of this. And I was like, Stace, it's Singing in the Rain. Like, it's a massive show. She's like, oh, right, well, I didn't know. Well, are they going to do it again? I said, I don't know. I said, if they ever do it again, you should play that Donald O'Connor character called Cosmo. And I was like, I mean, that would be a dream come true. But, you know, I don't know if they're ever going to do it again. It just wasn't, I just forgot about it. 2 months later, or 3 months later, whenever it was, early in that year, my agent calls me. I'm on the way back from the opticians. And my agent calls me and says, Kev, what do you think about playing Cosmo and Singing in the Rain? I went, what? He went, yeah, I just think it'd be a good part for you. And I went, it's funny you say that, because Stace said that when we watched it on Christmas Day. Stace said, I think out of anything that you've ever talked about, this is the perfect character for you. This is your part. And I was like, that's amazing that this is happening. And he said, yeah, it was supposed to go out before the pandemic. Now it's coming out again. They're going to do it at Sadler's Wells. Now, Sadler's Wells is the theatre where I decided to, where I went and watched Matthew Bourne's Edward Scissorhands and decided I was going to dance again at that period when I'd given up dancing, which I'm sure we've spoken about before, but like I'd just given up dancing. I didn't want to do it anymore. And I got inspired by a show at Sadler's Wells. And so they're going to do it at Sadler's Wells. I was like, oh my God, doing Cosmo at Sadler's Wells. And he went, I'll send you the breakdown for the character. So he sends, you know, within this age range, this sort of look, you know, these skills, whatever. And at the bottom it said, must be an outstanding tap dancer. And I was like, I've never tap danced in my life. It's not something that, I don't have that skill. And tap dancing is so different to the dancing I do, and it's so hard. And I was like, oh, what a shame. Like, I can't do it, because I'd have loved to have done it. And my agent was like, oh, well, you must have done some. I was like, I haven't done any. And he said, well, can you not like have a little go or something? I was like, there's no point. And Stace went, I think you're a maniac if you don't have a go at this. And I was like, but I can't tap dance, Stace. It doesn't work like that. And she was like, but I think they will think that you're perfect for this role. I was like, it doesn't work like that, Stace. She was like, well, why don't you have a go? And I said to her, I'm going to embarrass myself if I try and tap dance in front of them, trying to be Cosmo and singing in the rain to people that I, you know, need to impress if I'm going to do well in this theatre career. And she was like, go for it. And this is what, when you say, if you don't risk anything, you risk everything. And I was like, all right. I said to my agent, right, give me a couple of weeks. So I bought, this was during lockdown, I bought a some tap shoes and a tap board. It's a little, basically a square of wood off of Amazon. And I started to learn tap dancing off YouTube. And I was just doing the basic steps. And I sent a video to my agent when I sort of learned the basic time step. And my agent went, yeah, I'm not going to send that to them. That's really basic and really slow and really shit. I was like, okay. I was like, all right, I'm going to have to like speed this up. And I'd met someone through like sort of Instagram Live-y type stuff and Clubhouse talks and whatever. I'd met someone who I've never actually met in person still, but she's in like the theatre world. During lockdown, I got in touch with her and she seems to know everyone in theatre land. And I went, can you find me someone who's an amazing tap dance teacher? I need to be on the other side of the Strictly Come Dancing process. I need to become the student and they need to just chuck it at me and teach me like a routine. I don't need to know everything about tap dancing. I just need to demonstrate I can learn a routine. She says, I know just the guy. So she puts me in touch with this guy, Ryan. I call Ryan. He goes, what is it for? I'm like, I don't know if I'm allowed to say, actually. How long have we got? Don't know. Is it for an audition? Potentially, but I don't know. What type of tap? I know nothing about tap. I don't know. He's like, all right, okay. I want to make sure I'm the right person. So I'm going to tell you something about myself, and you tell me if I'm the right person. I went, all right. And he goes, I'm the assistant dance captain on Singing in the Rain. I went, you're the man. He went, you're going to audition for Cosmo, aren't you? I was like, oh, I don't know. I just want to sort of see if I can, you know, give it a go. So I got this guy around to my house. We weren't allowed inside, so we're in the garden, tap dancing. I was driving Stace mad, and I had him for hours just tapping, trying to learn as much as I could, throwing myself at it, and then did a little short routine and sent it off to them. And they were like, okay, yeah, we're quite sort of, yeah, I like what we're seeing. We want to see you in the room for an audition with the director and with the choreographer and with Adam Cooper, who's the star of the show, who's like a massive name in the dance world. And I was like, oh my God, what am I even doing? And I was saying to Stace that it's just silly, like that there's no point in me doing this because it's going to be embarrassing. I'm in there with, I have no business being there. And she went, I think you should chuck yourself in, otherwise you're going to regret it. Which is basically saying, if you don't risk anything, you risk everything. And so I went to this audition. I said to my agent, all right, in for a penny, why not? And I turned up and I had that feeling of like, what am I doing here? And I just gave it everything in the audition. And the choreographer comes out and starts teaching this bit of tap. And the tap dance routine that the choreographer started showing me was the exact one that Ryan had been teaching me in my back garden. And I was like, this is like hallelujah, like everything is falling into place. And then I got the job. I got offered the part like a few days later and went and played Cosmo in Singing in the Rain. Now, like 2 years ago when we did episode one, there is no way on God's green earth that I would have thought that would even be possible. And I also would never have even gone to the audition because I'd have been too scared. But today we're sat here on episode 100 and I've done it. I've performed at Sadler's Wells as Cosmo in Singing in the Rain, like this dream part as a tap dancer, which is something I couldn't do on episode one. And it's given me like massive confidence. Not because like, oh, look at me, I played this massive role at Sadler's Wells. More just like, I couldn't even do that before. I wouldn't have even tried to do it before. But just because I've thrown myself at it, you know, you say, start now, get perfect later. Like, just because I threw myself at it and did it, Like, now I can say I've done it. So now I'm in this zone where, on episode 100, where because of that experience, I sort of feel like I can turn my hand to anything. I'm sure there'll be failures along the way, but like, I feel like, why not just throw myself in and do what I want? So with the drama series and all that, it's like, before it'd be like, oh, I'd really like to do this. I don't know if I'm good enough. I'm going to try. Da, 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 da. Now I'm like, okay, yeah, I'm going to do that.
Mm.
Yeah, why not?
Mm.
Like, because I've done this. Like, once you realize that you sort of can do what you want to do, it's so empowering.
Mm.
So that's been a massive change.
That's another great story. Save some for the next 100 episodes.
Yeah.
One thing I'd like to pick up on, yeah. I was just picking up on it a lot. It sounds like a lot of the times when you've got these quite important decisions, you talk to Stacey about it. And it sounds like you've got someone there who's very supportive and maybe challenges you and maybe pushes you to do things that she believes in you that maybe you don't as much believe in you. So on a general discussion, is it important to have, you know, those good supportive people around you who've got your back? Have you been in situations in the past where people haven't got your back? This, you know, people in my world of business and entrepreneurship talk a lot about your power team and your circle, and you've got to have people who've got your back and, you know, want you to win and will challenge you as well. So is that a big part of your life at the moment?
Yeah, I think it definitely helps. I think it always does come back to that thing of no, and you can do a lot when you believe in yourself. I know that sounds mad cheesy. But
the cheesy stuff is cheesy because it's common.
You can do loads of stuff when you properly back yourself and believe in yourself. But I think what I've learned is if you don't quite believe in yourself, it can only help to surround yourself with people who are going to have a positive influence on you in whatever way you say, like whether it's just believing in you and encouraging you, or whether it's challenging you because they know you can do better, for example. Just surrounding yourself with the right people is important. And
if you were going to do something really freaking stupid,
yeah,
would Stacey go, don't be stupid?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. Because I think I hear you, and that's great to hear. On the other side of it, people who won't challenge you, do you think it's important also to have the challenge as well as the support?
Yeah. Because I think sometimes there's been a couple of instances where I might have taken a certain job when I'm like, oh, you know, maybe I should do this, and they're throwing... I won't say what it was, but there was something this year where a lot of money was being thrown at me to do something.
OnlyFans, your new OnlyFans?
No, not OnlyFans, no. Trust me, there wouldn't be that much money thrown at that. but it was a certain performing job, and there was a lot of money being thrown at me. But I knew that I didn't want to do it, but I wasn't quite saying it. But Stace could see that I didn't want to do it because I wanted to do something else that I found would be more challenging and more credible and more sort of in line with what I was looking to do, but for less money. And I knew that I wanted to go down that path, but I was looking at this money going, oh, God. And Stace was kind of like, no, I think you don't want to do it. And I was like, no, you're right. I don't want to do it. She was like, then why are you on the edge of accepting it? And I was like, well, you know, the money. And she was like, yeah, but you'll earn money anyway with the stuff that you're doing. And I think you don't want to go down that path on the left. You want to go down that path on the right, I think. And I was like, no, you're right. And she really challenged me on it, because I was starting to edge towards, no, maybe I should just do that. You know, it's easy money and, you know, whatever. But she was really good to talk to, because I think she could see that I didn't want to do it, and she wanted me to back myself in a slightly more challenging direction. And she was backing me. She was like, I know what you want to achieve, and I think you can achieve it. But I, but I, I think you're close to selling out of it. And I was like, yeah, I know. But she was really good to talk to. She backs me. Mm. She believes in me, mm. which definitely helps. Mm.
So let me ask you this follow-up question. 150 grand a year for the rest of your life doing the most meaningful and fulfilling work you believe is humanly possible, mm-hmm. or 15 million a year doing sellout work? Which one do you take?
I don't think there's a right answer to this.
I want your answer. I want it honest.
My answer sat here right now. Honestly, the 150 grand a year doing the meaningful stuff. Because I think, and I'm not saying that has to be the way for everyone. And maybe if I had a kid, that might be different. Yeah. Because then I suppose you're...
Or a divorce or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. I suppose your importance goes in different directions. You know, your values in terms of what you want to do.
Yeah.
But 150 grand a year, you know, it's not 10 grand a year. And doing really meaningful, fulfilling stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's where I'm at the moment. But ask me on episode 500 when when I've got a kid. And then I'll be like, give me the 15 million.
Nice.
What would you say?
As in, what would I do? Mm. I can't live on 150 grand a year. I can't. Okay. I sold a 150 gram watch before the lockdown. So, I'd have to take the 50 million purely because my wife and kids and private school and everything else.
Yeah.
If it was a reasonable but not opulent amount of money to live on and I got to do really fulfilling work, I'd take the reasonable amount.
Yeah.
But it'd just have to be a bit more than that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it'd have to be like 5 million or 500 million. Yeah, but I think quality of life is a great part of that is meaningful work, passion merged into your profession. Mm. And it's nice to have lots of money and trappings, but if you can have a comfortable lifestyle and do meaningful work, I think most of us would take that. Mm. Mm.
It's like because I've been talking with my agent and stuff, and we talk about, you know, what would you like to do next and whatever. And I've got, like, I'm ticking off all of the sort of musical stuff that I want to do. That's all happening and that's all brilliant. And the TV drama series thing, you know, the ball's really rolling on that. But so now I'm saying to him, like, I would love to do a play, just like not a musical, a straight play where it's just acting. And even if it's like, you know, for pennies, you know, it's some like an arty, you know, small theatre thing where I can just properly explore and learn as an actor. Like, I'd love to do something like that. So I guess that plays into it a little bit, like, because I'm so interested in doing something like that. Like, I mean, if they want to offer me loads of money, great. But at the same time, like, I'm in terms of what I'm looking to do at the moment, next is like a gritty play or something, and it's not necessarily about, like, because another job that I was offered was something a lot more sort of commercial but wouldn't be as meaningful to me or challenging, and it was for a lot more money. Yeah, that's where I am at the moment.
Episode 700, let's come back and
700
say,
yeah. Give me the millions.
Should we do a quick fire?
Okay,
before we do, I was contemplating whether to ask you this or not, but you threw out some emotion. What do you think about the freedom of speech?
Because we were talking about this before we...
You were going for it.
Yeah. This is...
Okay, you, in or out, you decide. This is your show. This is a bit of a random.
Yeah.
But I just think you've got a big opinion on it.
Yeah.
And you've had a lot of criticism and you've had the media against you. So... Actually, you're quite credible to put an opinion across. What do you think about freedom of speech?
So there's a lot of people that complain about freedom of speech after they've just said something mean, and then people criticize them. So people throw something out there, they say something sort of controversial and usually quite mean and unkind. You know, they'll say something about someone and then they get a load of criticism. Or they'll say something against a group of people, a community of people. You know, it might be people of a certain sexuality or, you know, whatever, a race or whatever. And then they'll get criticised for it. And then they go, freedom of speech. I should be allowed to say what I want. And it always gets my back up. It always annoys me. We've talked about it on like when people say things about people on Strictly. Because I just think, no, you're misunderstanding, you're misreading the situation. No one is coming in and saying, freedom of speech shouldn't be a thing. Like you've already said it. You're not going in jail for saying it. There's never been more freedom of speech than there is today. With, you know, I've got my own podcast. I can say what I want on it. People are on radio shows, people are on TV. And if they're not, they've got a social media account. They just say what they want. And everyone does, and there's a lot of people mean to everyone. Like, freedom of speech isn't a huge problem. But what people do is, you can see me getting passionate about it already, what people don't seem to understand is that that's not the same thing as freedom from criticism or freedom from consequences. So if you came into my house...
Are you not going to pull this analogy out?
I am.
But I would never do this.
No, I know you wouldn't. This is a completely mental analogy. But if you came back to my house tonight and Stacey was there and you started calling Stacey names and saying, I think you're fat and I think you're a whore and I think you're... Like, saying horrible... I know you would never do this. This is a completely...
Have you got a dog?
Nuts.
Can I say nasty things about your dog instead?
No, let's make it very real. If you came into my house and said... Stacey, you are this, I'd kick you out of my house. I know you would never do that. But like, if you were that kind of person, I would kick you out of the house, and it would be my right to do that and say, you can't say that in here. If you turned around and went, freedom of speech, I should be allowed to say whatever I want, I'd go, well, you just have. Now fuck off. That's what I'd say.
Yeah.
Like that, just because you can say it, doesn't mean that everyone else has to shut up and sit down and accept it. Mm. So when I hear someone, like we've just had someone talk about one of the contestants on Strictly, some guy with a radio show talked about Gordon Ramsay's daughter, Tilly, on Strictly, and said something horrible about her, you know, about what she looked like. And then everyone basically turned around and went, don't be a dick. Like, called him out on it. And went, don't be a dick. And then him and all the sort of usual types that, oh, freedom of speech is the hill that I will die on. You know the type. Like, they all rallied around him, giving it, well, he should be able to say what he wants. And it's like, no, he just has on a national radio station. He's got a massive platform to say it. But it's also, if you're fighting for freedom of speech, then you're also fighting for our right to call you a dick. And my thing is, don't be a dickhead. Mm. Just in most, that's my point for most things. Don't be a dickhead. Don't be a dickhead to work with. Don't act like a dickhead. Don't be horrible to people. And some people just say stuff for engagement. They will call people out, like have a go at people, and they'll say controversial things for engagement on social media. And then when someone goes, stop being a dick, they go, well, freedom of speech, I'm allowed to say it. It's like, you really haven't thought this through. Mm. You've already said it. Just don't be a dick. And they go, oh, cancel culture. Oh, the wokey cancel culture. And it's like, if you start going down that road, you've already lost the argument to me. Because you don't know what woke means. It's just something you've picked up from one of the right-wing tabloids. And you're like a weapon to say to someone, oh, I've called you woke, ha ha. I'm like, fucking call me woke. Like, And they say it's cancel culture. But like I say, if you come in my house and start calling my girlfriend names, I'm going to cancel you from my house. Of course I am. Mm. Like, do you know what I mean? So I think any institution or platform or, you know, radio station or whatever, if they decide, you know what, you're not going to say that stuff on our platform, you can call it cancel culture if you want, but like they can still say it. That person's still going to go onto their social media platform and say something, you know, and say the same thing. You haven't cancelled their freedom of speech. You've just said, you're not going to do this in my house. Mm. You're not going to carry on like that because I don't like what you're saying here. And there is a line there already, because if someone was outside on the street now citing hate speech, sort of terrorist hate speech, telling everyone to do horrible things, that person would get arrested. So freedom of speech doesn't exist completely. So at some point, someone has decided, we need to make a law. You can't just go around saying this, right? Mm. So, and then all those people that would go, oh, freedom of speech is the hill that I will die on, would not say it's okay for that person to say terrorist shit out on the street. So at some point, they've drawn a line and said, we have to say that this is not okay. So the point is, where is that line? Is it okay to go on a national radio station and say horrible things about the way a young girl looks? I don't think so.
I don't think so in our culture, where people take that really personally.
No.
What I find ironic is the people who take criticism the worst are critics.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. They say the most mean or unfounded things. Mm. And then as soon as you retort,
yeah,
off they go.
Yeah.
I get it on my Facebook feed all the time.
Yeah.
All the time.
But that's the irony, is that, one, they're more triggered than, you know, in terms of
yes.
So easily angered than anyone. Yeah. The people that are mouthing off, I should be able to say what I want. Freedom of speech. I should be allowed to say my opinion. Those are the people they never shut up. They're the people you hear from the most. And the second you go, I don't agree with that opinion, I think you're a dick, like, that's a really horrible thing to say, they go, oh, freedom of speech! I should be allowed to say what I want. It's like, I've been listening to you for years. You don't shut up. Like, do you know what I mean? And it's like, they get angry about you having an opinion. So they're not for freedom of speech.
Freedom of their speech.
Exactly. Yeah. They're for freedom of, I should be allowed to say whatever I want, even if it's really mean about whoever I like to be mean about, and suffer no consequences. And you should just not retaliate. You should just sit down and listen to what I say. That's what they want.
Mm.
So it's like, and people just bring it back to like personal stuff, like when people, Strictly's on, so people give me a lot of, they ask me questions on social media, or they'll give me opinions or whatever. And there's two lads dancing together this year, John and Johannes, and for the most part, everyone loves them. There's the odd one or two go, I don't think two lads should be dancing together. And I said, there was one guy who was really adamant about it. I don't think this should be happening. It's disgraceful. And I said, okay, please explain why you think that's disgraceful. Oh, freedom of speech. I went, no. You've said your point. You've got your freedom of speech. You're on my platform with, now everyone can see it because you're leveraging my following. And on that platform, I have literally said, please enlighten me. I'm asking for you to further your opinion. Tell me, explain to me why you think that's disgraceful. It's my opinion. Yeah, I'm asking you why. Explain. Really, actually explain it to me. Oh, it's just the BBC being woke. Okay, explain that to me. What do you mean by woke? Specifically, be specific. What do you mean by there being woke? Oh, I think you're just trying to get me to say something homophobic or racist. I never mentioned homophobia or racism. You have done. You're the one getting defensive. And if your argument is, I'm not going to explain, I should be allowed to say whatever I want, but I'm not going to explain it to you because I might sound homophobic or racist, I would suggest you've got more of a problem than I have. Do you know what I mean? Because I'm asking you, explain it to me in front of everyone. Explain it. No. Freedom of speech. Storm out. Walk off. I'm not talking to you anymore. Like we've seen on morning shows.
Mm. I think you should have a bit more of an opinion on freedom of speech.
I'm going to be horrible about Meghan Markle. I don't think you should be. Well, I'm off. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm leaving. Okay. Well, you just cancelled yourself then.
cancelled yourself culture.
Yeah. Do you know what I mean? It's that, this whole thing annoys me so, whenever someone goes, oh, freedom of speech, I just go, this is so boring, and you just don't understand the argument. Freedom, there's not an issue with freedom of speech.
I know what to write on your platforms if I'm a bit bored one evening. Wifey doesn't want to know. Kev, what do you... Have you got a favourite episode you've done?
Of this podcast?
Yeah. Like your 100. Have you got a favourite? Don't have to name the number. It doesn't have to have me in it, which leaves 98.
Yeah.
Yeah, but yeah, have you got a favourite one? Or a standout moment?
I mean, I had Russell Brand on. He's amazing. He's really helpful with everything he talks about. So in terms of an entire episode, he's really interesting. I've had some just great moments. Like, I talked to Motsi Mabuse, who's a judge on Strictly, and she was talking about how she's developing her dance school with a lot of emphasis on, like, the kids growing as people, not just as dancers, because that's what I've talked a lot about my experience in the competition world and how sort of difficult some of it was for me. And I thought that was really interesting to think that people are moving in the right direction there. I had a theatre performer called Cassidy Jansen who came on, and she was telling me about the vagus nerve in your body, that if you calm that, you can actually calm down a lot of your system in terms of nerves. That was really fascinating. Like, that was really interesting. And I think just as a whole, how most people, like people who I talk to, who I really admire, have all been in the same position of going, but also, of course, I get mad nervous when I'm going into doing this, or of course I've got imposter syndrome when I'm taking on this big new job or whatever. And it's been an amazing sort of journey of going, this is amazing, like everyone's in the same boat, which is what I said on episode one that I wanted to hear, actually, from it. I wanted to hear that it wasn't just me who was feeling like that on episode one, that this is so difficult and everyone else has got it all figured out and they're all brilliant and talented and whatever. Like, I'll just come back to that point of, like, everyone's just doing their best and winging it and learning on the job, figuring out as they're going along, and everyone's just at different stages in that process.
Great. Quick fire time.
Uh-oh. Can I go for a wee before we do quick fire time?
No, because then you can be quick.
Yeah, okay.
I'm not your dad, so you can if you want. But, like, we talked about this quick fire round before.
Yeah.
And we're trying to do 15 seconds so we can make Kev go viral on TikTok. And Kev said, yeah, I could never do a 15-second answer.
Yeah.
So I reckon the accountability of you needing the toilet will make your answers quicker.
Right. Okay. Yeah? Yeah. Yeah.
So your goal, your mission, should you choose to accept it, is to try and answer the question in 15 seconds.
Okay.
If it's 20-25, you'll still go viral on TikTok, but it can't be longer than 30 seconds. It's got to be 15, ideally.
Yeah.
All right, so you ready?
I'll try.
All right. Would you rather have 1 million engaged followers or 1 million pounds cash, and why?
1 million engaged followers, because I think that's becoming even more of a currency nowadays in terms of what you want to do and what you want to achieve.
Have you got a 15-second hack for mental strength?
Know that it's okay to like what you like and be interested in what you're interested in, and anyone who criticizes is telling you more about themselves than they are about you.
Oh, that is gold. That is gold. Tell us something about Kevin Clifton that most people don't know.
That not long before I started doing theatre and Strictly Come Dancing, when I'd just left the competition world, I auditioned for a dance agency to try and get work, and they didn't take me. They thought I wasn't good enough.
I wonder if they're watching or listening.
I hope so.
Yeah. What's your morning routine?
Coffee, basically. if I'm on a good day, then I will meditate and read a bit. I like to read in the morning with a coffee.
How do you deal with haters?
I used to worry about haters. Now I understand that they're just getting stuff out of themselves that is more about them than it is about me. And I just feel sorry for them.
How do you deal with rejection?
I try and use rejection as a learning experience. And that's where I've changed. I used to really worry about it. Now I just go, okay, how can it be acceptance next time?
Kev, what's the key to a happy life?
Understanding yourself and what you want and having clarity on that and being okay with that and aligning yourself with that, not what you think you should be doing with your life, what you want to do with your life.
And does it help to close your eyes when you answer yeah. that question?
Yeah.
Game show, yeah. Memorize.
Yeah.
Thought that was brilliant. Kev, it's been a pleasure. Congratulations on your 100th episode.
Thank you.
It's a really big thing. Most podcasts don't get to 100. Yeah. As you know, we have a podcast agency. We obviously help you with your podcast. Half of our podcast clients who've paid haven't launched yet. So it's actually a really big thing. I mean, probably not some of the, your life achievements, but it is a big thing to get to 100 episodes. So yeah, congratulations.
Yeah. I'm really pleased. Yeah, I'm really happy about it. Cheers.
All right. And thanks for having me on your 100th episode.
I'll see you on the 200th or 500th or whatever.
Yeah, my fees will go up.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks, Kev.
Cheers.